Welcome to Through the Corporate Glass, a podcast that explores career choices.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode. I am Deepa, your host for today's episode. Digital products are an integral part of our day-to-day lives. We are increasingly aware about our experiences with these products, say even websites, whether they delight us, make us happy, or drive us insane. I have always wanted to understand what it takes to design and build these experiences. What are the roles in an organization that help drive user experience? What skills does it take to do this? We talk about this with Stephanie Williams, UX Director at GE Healthcare. Stephanie has over 17 years of experience in the industry. She started out as a usability specialist at Ford Motor Company, moved on to lead user research and design, and now as director, drives experience strategy and focuses on making it a part of how the organization works. I have always found Stephanie to be pragmatic and candid in her observations. She's passionate about mentoring people, helping them find answers as they try to navigate their way through this fascinating world of user experience. On a personal note, I have always reached out to her to hear her thoughts on many topics. I have enjoyed and learned a ton from each of my conversations. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the episode. Really happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Deepa. Thank you for having me.
So, Stephanie, when you started your career journey, did you know about user experience? Were you aware that, yes, that's the field I want to be in?
Oh, no, not at all. When I went to college, I had ended up getting 2 degrees. I got a degree in computer science because I liked the challenge. Most of my friends were in engineering, and I felt I needed to prove myself to them. But after a couple of years, I took a psychology class, and I thought it was fun, and I needed something else to focus on other than computer science, so I ended up doing the double major. So fast forward to graduation. Post 9/11 was a horrible time to find a job. So finally lucked out, found a job at Ford Motor Company, where I was on their placement team for IT. And I was on this team for several years. So on this team, we partnered with vendors to place contractors in IT roles. So I had a lot of visibility in the different sort of roles there were in IT. And at the same time, I started designing the UI for enhancements for our internal procurement system. This was a system where managers would submit their contractor roles and they would receive approvals. And it's funny, I look back and it's interesting that the very first wireframes I ever designed were actually in PowerPoint. So while I was on this team, one of my coworkers who was also on the team with me, she said, "Did you ever look at the usability team?" I looked at her, I said, I don't know what that is. What's usability?" And she just looks at me and says, "You know, it would be a really good fit because of your background." And it all comes back for that studying computer science and psychology, which at the time I didn't really think had anything to do with each other, ended up being this perfect fit for user experience, or at the time, usability. So I reached out to the manager of the usability team. He was great. He recommended a few books to me. And within that year, I actually became a usability specialist on the usability team. And that's really where it began.
That's so nice to hear, to see computer science and psychology come together.
It's like it was almost like I was thinking ahead.
Yes, it always feels like that. But that's such a good combination for user experience. So what were the books that he recommended, by the way? What did you read?
So there were a few, and to start by reading Don Norman, The Design of Everyday Things. And then there's Jacob Nielsen, Definitely Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug, which is the one book, if anybody ever asks, I tell them, read that book. It's quick. It will change your life. And then the other book that I remember him recommending was The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. The chapter on dancing bears, which is really distractions on web pages that you add for the sake of them just being there. Again, that was a big one for me.
That sounds really interesting. I think that definitely I'll look up. So you started with usability there. How was your experience? Was it like how you had read through in the books?
It was similar. And I'll tell you a little bit about that first role in that first team. Because as I've been in my career, I've really seen this evolution in what user experience really is and what it should be. So on that team, we had two primary focuses. The first was, I think, what a lot of people think of with UX, which is designing things that are easy to use. So that team was fun because we spent a lot of time just having debates about the best way to create forms or display hint text, or what is really the best date format to use, when to use an overlay. And that was really fun because it was a way for me to just design, which I really liked. But we also did a lot of usability testing. And back then, when I thought about user research, that was what I thought of, was this validation testing. We even had a 3-room lab. And I remember this. We had this one room, which was the experimentation room. It was complete with a 1-way window or mirror, right? So the person who would be in there would only see the mirror. And if you're on the other side, it's a window. And it was a completely unrealistic environment for the person who was being tested because they're just sitting alone by themselves in this room. So then the room next to it was this observation room where you could actually watch a live feed of what was happening in the experimentation room. And then finally, there was a control room, and this was like the high-tech room for early 2000s. There's monitors and microphones and recording equipment. And what was really going on this team was that all we really cared about was the UI. All we really were doing was being told, this is what you need to design. Create it using usability principles, and then validate it with your users.
That's fantastic. I love all your labs, Stephanie.
Every time we interviewed somebody and we told them, hey, you know, we have a UX lab, they would get so excited. Back then, you talked about labs and you talked about eye tracking. Those were like the two really modern UX tools that you would hear us about using.
At this point, you would have started off with usability, design. How did you evolve from that role to the next one that you moved to?
So, great question. After I was on that team for several years, I finally got to a point where I really felt like I was no longer growing. And there was actually a new UX team that was being built by GE Capital, which was actually really close to my house, surprisingly. I heard that they were building this team. And I thought, you know what, that's where I want to go. I want to be part of a new UX team. So ended up coming to GE Capital, and that's where things really started to change my way of thinking. One of the big things was they were making a conscious effort to hire people who were dedicated UX researchers. And this was really when it clicked for me that research is not just about usability testing, but it's really about understanding that you're building the right thing and asking questions. Why are we building this product? And probably one of my all-time favorite questions, what is the problem we are trying to solve? And you'll hear me say that to this day. What exactly are we trying to solve here? And this stuck with me. But one of the problems I had on this team is that even though we knew that this was the right way we should be approaching things, we were not empowered to challenge things. We all knew that we were not approaching design correctly, but we really couldn't push back. We had these tight deadlines, and our stakeholders would insist to us that there was one proper way to approach the problem, and it was their way. So really, the only area we could control it as a team was the UI, and even then, we had some limitations. So eventually, I had the opportunity to start moving more into UX leadership roles, UX director roles. And my biggest priority to this day is empowering my team to really lead the UX strategy. Even at times when I would have a team that was very short-staffed, I would insist that where we could have the biggest impact is if we're focusing on the overall user process and knowing that we're building the right thing instead of getting laser focused on that UI design. And so what I would do is ensure that our functional partners, as well as our DT partners, understand this role of UX partnership. One of the things that I say quite a bit is focusing on the actual outcomes instead of the outputs. We all know that building things is great. Seeing things in production is awesome. But the big goal is knowing that if users are actually able to achieve what they need to achieve, and the business is getting their ultimate goal achieved as well, that's the most important thing.
You know, as you were taking us through your journey, I can see the definition of user experience also evolve from your first role to now where you are trying to get to the root of what it will take for the user to achieve what they set out to do.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this too. It's like, what is my definition of user experience? And I realized today you hear the terms user experience and customer experience often used very interchangeably. So user experience is really a subset of the customer experience. If you look at customer experience, it's really the entire journey that a user is taking to accomplish a particular goal and their overall satisfaction with that entire experience. Whereas the user experience is usually going to be very specific to the interaction that the user has with the product that you're designing. So here's a couple examples. I'm in Michigan. I might receive in the mail a notice that I need to renew my driver's license at the Secretary of State. Nobody really ever wants to receive these notices because it's a big nuisance. So we get this notice and we see, okay, I need to go in and register on a website to make an appointment. So I go try to get to the website. First of all, the page takes about 30 seconds to load, let's say. I go in, I try to create my account, fill out all the fields on the page only to find out that I can't create an account because I already have one. Okay, so now I need to go in, figure out what my user ID is, have to fill out another form. It's a very long, ugly form, let's say. And then I receive an email with my correct ID. Now I need to reset my password. It takes me several times because there's restrictions on the type of password I can create. And let's say the UI doesn't even tell me what these restrictions are. So now let's say I finally log in. I look to create an appointment. Finally find it because, of course, it's hidden on the site. And after having some issues with this calendar widget because, let's say, it keeps defaulting to last year, I schedule my appointment. So this is like the worst case user experience. So now I'm going to the Secretary of State office with extremely low expectations. Nobody ever looks forward to going there. Fortunately, it's close to my house, so it's actually convenient. I walk in, I expect a long line, but for some reason, they're actually waiting for me. They smile at me, I go up, and they patiently take my photograph several times so it doesn't look like a mug shot like it usually does. And they even have at the counter, let's say they have candy. So even though I had this awful user experience with this website, that overall customer experience that I had, I end up leaving very happy and very satisfied. Now, here's the opposite sort of example. Think about a support experience on a website. And this is something my team has actually designed. You can think about including things like, hey, there's articles about common issues. Oh, there's FAQs where you can see the supposed frequently asked questions. Maybe you design a really nice way to submit a ticket to get support. Maybe it's really easy to find the page that has the actual phone numbers you can call to get help. Or maybe they even have my favorite, which is the click to chat or live help functionality. So from a UI perspective, you can imagine, wow, I can find anything I want. It's really easy for me to connect to somebody. But then you might have issues with this. You might submit a ticket and you may not get a response after several days. Or you may actually try calling a phone number and end up being online waiting for an hour. This has actually happened to me recently. Or you may go into live chat only to find out that the people on the other side of the live chat don't know the answer to your question and don't know where to direct you. So in a case like this, the user experience of the website, fantastic. It looks great, easy to use, but the overall customer experience is super frustrating. And it's that quality of that support that's going to influence how positive that overall experience is. Because really, in this case, the design only ended up playing a small role.
Those were fantastic examples. So if you take an organization, where does UX typically fit in? Like, is it most successful when it is a separate org, or it is a part of, you know, say product management or anything else? How does it fit in into the organization structure?
So I would say you really see two different phenomenons, most usually, at least from what I've seen. One is the way that I don't recommend, which is where you have a single UX person aligned to an organization or product team. This person needs to focus on absolutely everything. Because as I've touched upon, there's many facets of UX. This person needs to be thinking about research and UI and overall strategy and validation testing and getting into visual design and accessibility, and may even be asked to do some front-end development or facilitate design thinking sessions. And the joke we always say is we call these people UX unicorns because unicorns don't exist. Most people in UX you're going to find are very T-shaped. They have that in-depth knowledge and passion. The passion is really important in one or two specific areas, but they have a general understanding or an appreciation of other areas in UX. And the other problem is when you have one UX person as this island, typically they are viewed as the UI person and their focus is building screen after screen after screen. So I'm very biased, admittedly, but I love having more of a design-centered organization where you do have this one team, a diverse group of what I'll call a UX practitioner. And these are people that are always empowered to leverage their strongest skills rather than being a unicorn. I often tell people, you can't do 100% of the things 100% of the time, so do the things that you know are going to make the biggest difference. And I can also, as a director, align people to the right projects that are going to really leverage their strengths. Plus, when you have this larger org, each individual knows that they have the support of the rest of their team, of the UX director. And then you also have opportunities on a bigger team to mentor people. I'm a big fan of bringing people into the team that may not have formal UX experience, but have a passion for UX, and helping build them up so they can become UX experts. And then when you have this bigger team, you have so many opportunities within for people to collaborate, partner with each other. You can start looking at standards that everybody can buy into. And then you can also, as a team, establish this culture of leading design strategy and not just design. And it also makes UX more accessible for other teams. I've talked to many people who say, we can't afford a full-time UX designer. Is there any way somebody on your team can help? And I really like to try to get people involved, especially if we have bandwidth. And the other thing is, it is really, really hard to hire the right UX people. So a lot of people out there who are like, all right, I'm going to hire a UX person for my team. they just get blown away by a really flashy portfolio. They think, wow, this person, look how strong of a designer is. They're going to be a great fit. And they bring that person on. Whereas I find you have to have a much more thorough process to make sure you're bringing the right people onto the team.
See, Stephanie, you spoke about, you know, the lone unicorn. Now you have a team for UX as a director, and I get that view. So can you tell us a bit more about the different roles in UX? Like, we spoke about UX research, you spoke about design. So maybe let's go through the different roles that we have in user experience.
Yes, there's many, many roles. And so I'll only touch upon a few. And I think it's really important to realize that most people in UX have probably at one time or another done multiple roles. So somebody who's in research may have previously been a designer, for instance. So interaction designers, I think when we think of UX practitioners, that's the first thing we think about. These are the people that are really incorporating research and understanding user needs into creating user interfaces. And when we talk about a user interface, it's not just designing the individual pages, but it's also looking at the overall organization of pages, what we call the information architecture of the site. How are people going to find the information based on how that it's organized? Then you have research. And research, again, is really about understanding the user needs and opportunities. I really look at research in two main buckets. The first bucket is really understanding and things that a person who's just trying to understand the lay of the land might do are user interviews or contextual inquiry, which is actually where you're shadowing somebody doing their job and asking them about what they're doing. Or they may be writing surveys, they may be looking at analytics, they may be, based on their research, creating personas so we know exactly who we're designing for, creating journey maps so you can see the entire customer journey of today as well as a potential future. They may lead design thinking activities, which is when you bring a group of people together to start aligning on their understanding of certain goals. Or they may even be doing more independent research, like cart sorting, competitive analysis, heuristic evaluation, when you go through a website and basically grade everything. When we talked about Jacob Nielsen earlier, that was a big part of his work was heuristic evaluation. The second area of research really is that validation, which is what I was talking about in my early days at Ford, when you actually test a product to see, hey, here's an example, here's what we want you to do, are you able to do it? And you observe, and then based on that, see what changes you might need to make to that design. So two main areas there. You also have visual designers. A lot of times people confuse interaction designers with visual designers. The visual designers really focus on that look and feel and incorporating good accessibility practices such as contrast, as well as considering things like gestalt principles. How you group content together is how you know that it's connected. I always think with visual designers, it's a good way for someone who doesn't want to be a starving artist to leverage their artistic skills and be in digital technology. Sometimes you have people who are front-end developers who they start coding, then start realizing, you know, I want to have a better understanding of the user. That's a little bit of a gray area. I've been on teams where front-end developers are considered UX, or sometimes they're part of the development team. I would say those are probably the largest groups, but you could get into many, many other UX roles.
That was a great summary. So, Stephanie, I know we spoke about these different roles. What I would really love to also hear about is how their daily life would be. Like, say, imagine I take a role as a UX researcher. What would I be doing?
Sure. So, there's a couple common threads with people in UX. First common thread is every day is different. And I think that's why we like our jobs so much, is because we don't get stuck in monotony as much as other people might. The other common thread, which you might not expect exactly, is that we are probably in more meetings than anybody because we need to be meeting with stakeholders and meeting with our users and connecting with development teams, because you can't just design anything. You have to make sure that the dev teams can actually implement what you design. And of course, there's lots of internal collaboration. I mean, if I talk to my team what their biggest complaint is, it's probably that they don't have as much time as they'd like to focus on doing research or actually designing. So it's really common for people to block off time on their calendar, which is very dedicated for that kind of work. So with the interaction designer, when they're not in all of these meetings, they're spending a lot of time iterating on ideas. Many of the designers I work with love to draw. They're wonderful artists, and so they'll just start sketching out ideas on paper, or I've even seen people pull out napkins and start drawing on them. And once they do that, then they can start iterating and actually creating their initial design. And one of the problems you have in UX is you never want to fall in love with your initial design because you have to be open to other people's feedback. If you just sit there arguing that this is the right design, this is the right direction you need to go, you're missing an opportunity to get some very important feedback, which is why I think that early iteration where it really is just sketches is so important. Because it's easier to throw that proverbial napkin away than a prototype you've spent hours and hours on. So that's sort of what an interaction designer might be doing. A researcher, I think it's funny, and I feel bad when I talk with researchers on my team, is it's one of those what people think I do, what I actually do sort of things. What people think I do, I'm interviewing people all day. What I actually do is trying to schedule interviews with people and hope that they show up. But, you know, they love their jobs. And with the research, there is so much opportunity for them to dig into data. Researchers tend to love data. They want to see the Adobe Analytics or Google Analytics. They want to run products like Hotjar, where you can actually track how a person is using a web page. And one of the ways I like to think about it in research is there is no perfect research method. I wish there was. You have to determine out of all the different tools, which are the ones that are going to be the most relevant to what you're researching and how you leverage those. And the other thing I would say is they spend a lot of time putting together reports too. So you have to be a person who likes doing a lot of writing or at least illustrating examples.
Now, if we take visual designers versus front-end developers, because I know front-end developers can be with the development team too, right? So if you are a visual designer, what would it be like?
It's funny because the visual designers and front-end developers, a lot of times it really comes down to what the tools are that they're using. I've worked with a number of visual designers who were really, really good with front-end development, and they may even just jump right in to designing the CSS. But with a visual designer, it's interesting because there's a lot of different ways their role can play out. And a lot of it depends on what we would call the fidelity of the interaction design. So if you're an interaction designer, what you produce may end up being a very grayscale, traditional wireframe that leaves a lot to the imagination. Or as an interaction designer, you may produce something that looks almost pixel perfect. What the visual designer may do is take something that is that more grayscale design and elevate it to what it will look like when it's actually developed. Or sometimes if the designers are all working at a pretty high fidelity, a visual designer may be more focused on individual page elements, flourishes that you might see on the page, what imagery could look like, what the icons might look like, as well as designing what the look and feel of the overall design system might look like. And when we talk about design systems, just to put a little bit of context around that, I think of the design system in a lot of ways as the box of Legos that you take to build the pages. Everybody's using the same set of blocks. It's how you build them that really creates what the page looks like. And the other thing I would say about that is a good UX designer knows how to leverage a design system. A great UX designer knows exactly when to break the rules of the design system. There's a lot of times where you need to be able to break the rules and justify why you're breaking the rules.
Let's talk a bit about how does a career path look like? Because see, the way these roles are laid out, like you said, it's pretty fluid. If you are a UX person, at some point you would have played one or more of these roles. How do you look at a career path in UX? Where do you think people typically start and what's the growth path like?
It's a really interesting question. I think when a lot of people start in UX, they're really supporting the overall design of something that's already in flight. There's probably another lead UX designer that you're supporting, or there's a lead researcher that you're helping support in doing some of the testing. I've also worked with people that their first job was an internship where they were put in the role of a UX unicorn, which I don't recommend doing that to an intern, but it happens. But usually you should be in a role where you do have a great deal of support. And then the longer you're in that role, you'll start gaining more and more levels of responsibility as well as a bigger scope. Instead of looking at just a single part of a product, you might lead the entire product, or you might start looking at the entire user experience of an entire suite of products. But the career path question is a really tough one. To tell you the truth, I don't really work with very many people who aspire to be in my role. Most people are not looking to be the creative designer or creative director. They're looking more to be in these bigger, more almost individual contributor roles where they have this larger scope of influence. And sometimes when I talk to people on my team to try to understand, where do you want to go in your career? It's almost like I need to help them see outside the boundaries of what we consider user experience. Maybe instead of looking at user experience of web pages and applications, it's starting to look at the actual experiences of physical products, or even thinking about, you know, some of what I do, which is looking at org design, for instance, and how different organizations should function. You know, and I look at that more within the user experience context. But the nice thing about UX is it gives you this group of skills that can be applied, in my mind, to almost everything. And once you get this UX education, you know, when you're working and you're learning about UX, I really feel it can be applied to almost anything. And I encourage anybody who's in UX, don't hold yourself back. Think about what it is that you really want to do and think of it almost as a launching point to getting you there.
That's a nice thing. As you are speaking through and you are reflecting on your role too, so that's why I wanted to ask you a bit more about what does a leadership role in UX look like, you know? That would be a good perspective.
I can speak a bit about my UX role, and what's hard about being a UX director is, at least for me, you feel like you are truly a jack of all trades, master of none. The people on your team are tremendous experts in their particular areas. And as a UX director, I can ask questions and try to help guide them in different ways. But really, I'm looking at making sure I have the right people on the right projects and making sure they are empowered to do best work that they possibly can. And really just being creative and thinking about how do I get these groups of people that are not currently working together, partnering with each other. And again, it's just being a massive advocate for my team and the people on my team. I am proud of my team. I love watching them grow. In a lot of ways, you know, I have the easiest role possible because they're so good. They make my role in my life easy.
No, that's so nice to hear. I think this is a perfect segue to the next question that I had, that is hiring. You briefly touched upon it when you're speaking earlier. So I wanted to see, when you are hiring people to make sure you have the right people on the team, what are some of the things or guardrails that you keep in mind?
Yes. So it's funny. I try to not really look too much at anybody's portfolio ahead of time. I really just look, make sure, okay, yes, they're, and this is hiring usually for a UX designer, let's say. I try to look and make sure in their portfolio that they're not real graphic designers, because a lot of times people will apply for UX roles and they're really graphic designers. They're just really showing very flashy, attractive pages, but not really getting to the heart of what design is. So once I validate, okay, this person's truly a UX person, I go right to the behavioral interview. And I do that because I don't want to be biased ever by somebody's great design work. Because if somebody does really, really good in the behavioral screen, but not so strong in the design, I feel that they can improve with design. If they're given the right projects in the right mentoring, we'll get them up to speed. So when I'm doing a behavioral screen, there's certain things that I look for. I make sure that the person's going to be an advocate for the user, but I also make sure that that's not the only thing they think about. They need to make sure they're considering the business case and the business value. If we just built everything for our users and didn't actually think about what we're trying to accomplish as a business, we would fail. And then we also need to make sure that they are able to design things that can be implemented. They are able to work very well with development teams, and they know how to push the envelope a little bit without making it impossible. And it's like I said before, you know, you can't fall in love with your designs. So you need to make sure when you're talking with them that they show that they're humble. If somebody offers a suggestion or a recommendation, they're actually listening to it instead of just endlessly defending why they designed something the exact way that they did. And they need to prove that they can deal with ambiguity. In fact, it's not just being able to deal with it. They need to embrace it, not being given the exact boundaries. And then eventually, once we go through this and see, okay, from a behavioral perspective, yes, they're going to be a good fit. They're going to know how to be that good advocate. We go into the design review at that point. And it's not just looking at the overall UI. What I look for when I talk with people is making sure they can actually show the overall process of how they arrived at that design. If they're able to share research artifacts that they may have created or that they're referencing and say, these are the personas. This is how we derived at the personas. This is that overall customer journey. This is what we know about our users. And then they're able to show the design and tie the design back to the research. And this is key, because if you have the research, but the design doesn't tie back to it, the research didn't really do anything. This actually happens.
Wait, actually, like, yes. You sometimes get too lost in your, you know, race, complete your design or make your design look good, that you, you know, break the fundamentals.
It's so funny. It's like you have this great research, you know, your user, and yeah, I still don't understand why you designed this product, because it doesn't really tie back to anything you learned from your research or from your users. So, and the other thing I'd say is, if you have a portfolio, I would much rather see your grayscale wireframes, your drawings, even just your little pencil drawings that show that effort and show some of the more complicated interactions than just seeing that, like, oh, this is such a beautiful portfolio. And that happens a lot. I can almost look at a portfolio now and tell who is it directed for. Is it directed because they want to get hired by a UX team? Or is it because they're hoping that they're going to have a new client come to them for ad hoc? You can usually tell by looking at their portfolio.
True. So, see, Stephanie, you have a very interesting background because you studied both computer science and psychology formally. How important is the role of formal education on these subjects in the UX field?
So again, I'm really biased, but I would say today it's a lot more commonplace for people to come out of school with HCI degrees, that's human computer interaction. And I think a formal background is great. I especially like when people do it during their undergrad, because if you're going to get into UX, you want to at least have an undergrad degree in something. But when people go to grad school, and I get a little bit cynical about this, to be totally honest, is the difference between learning at school and learning on the job is you're either paying or being paid to get educated. So if you're able to get your foot in the door and get a job in UX before doing that graduate level study, I do feel with the right support, you can be very successful. I've worked with people with all kinds of degrees in UX, people that have these history degrees in really specific areas, or maybe they studied architecture because they literally were planning to be an architect. I've worked with many people that went to art school. And what I would say to somebody, especially now who's already in the workforce, really wants to get into user experience but doesn't know how, I would first tell them, explore the areas that they are the most passionate about. There's so many different segments of UX that you can get to, and there's so many books and websites and videos that it's very easy, if you're passionate about it, to go down a rabbit hole and start learning a lot. And I would say if you do that and you're not passionate about it, UX is probably not the right path for you. But once you start doing that and you start learning, at that point, you should be able to start applying the principles that you're learning in your current. And I've worked with a lot of people like this who they aren't in UX. Maybe they're in more of a TPM sort of role. They're passionate about UX, so they just start incorporating UX into their work. And as they do that, they can even start building a portfolio where they can show what they specifically did and show their thought process. And if you're thinking, well, you know, I have a general interest in UX, but even now I don't know where to start, I would just say the best thing you can do is be the person that asks a lot of questions. You don't ever want to derail a conversation. But if you're the person who stands up and asks, again, what is the problem we're trying to solve here? It might sound at times like, why are you asking this? But it makes everybody think. And that's the first step, honestly, in going into user experience.
You know, for someone who is getting ready for a UX career, what are some of the things that you would ask them to be prepared for? What would you tell them?
The biggest thing I tell people is what you do with your UX career is really up to you. Nobody is going to offer up immediately every single thing you can do in that role. If you're working on a product team, the only thing they may tell you is, hey, we need you to start designing these particular screens. What you need to expect is you're going to need to be the person who starts being the advocate and saying, we need to do more research. We need to understand what the problem is. We need time to iterate and actually test our designs before we actually implement anything. And that's really key. And I tell this even when we have interns join the team, is I tell them, don't expect us to tell you to do everything. This internship is exactly what you make of it. And I expect you to push things. And if you need support, you should get support from your team. You should get support from your team members. But it's just because you are new doesn't mean that your voice isn't important. You should feel empowered from the very beginning to do the right thing.
I think those are really important points in whichever role you are in your career. And I think in UX, especially when you have so many different possibilities. Great. That was such a nice conversation, Stephanie, and lovely talking to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you enjoyed our episode, do subscribe to the podcast and check out our show notes, which provide more information on the topics discussed during the episode. Please follow us on LinkedIn at Through the Corporate Glass and on Twitter at Corporate Glass and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our website, throughthecorporateglass.com.